All right, so this is bio 231, and it is August 26th. I think we're in the middle of tissues someplace. We're talking connective tissues, and the kind of connective tissue, I don't know, probably around cartilage somewhere, I would guess. So we're done talking about epithelium and the and what does epithelium make? It makes glands. Somebody said glands. That's what I was thinking. Okay, you should know some characteristics of epithelia. But epithelia make glands, and we looked at different kinds of glands, right? Like tubular glands, acinar glands, branched acinar glands. What is a single cell, unicellular gland that's actually an exocrine gland? Can you give me the name of a goblet cell? Somebody said goblet cell. Yes, because it's not an endocrine gland, because what's the product of a goblet cell? Mucus. Mucus doesn't go in your blood. It just covers the surface that goblet cell is situated in. Okay. What are a couple things about epithelia? I just want to review really quick. What are a couple characteristics of epithelia? Some can be waterproof, yeah, like your skin has epithelium, that's waterproof. No blood vessels, that's very interesting. All right, and basically no extracellular space. The cells are packed really close together because of tight junctions that they have between them and desmosomes and things like that. So the cells are attached to each other, very little extracellular space. In contrast to the tissue that we are looking at right now, which is what? Connective tissue. Yeah, connective tissue. And connective tissue, what can you tell me about the extracellular space in connective tissue? It is extensive. As a matter of fact, that's the most important thing about most connective tissues, and that is the extracellular material, not the intracellular material. What do we call that extracellular space in a connective tissue because it is so special? Yeah, the matrix, right? So you want to be familiar with the matrix of these various connective tissues. So what you see on the screen, how did we like the lights? Did we like them to turn down just a little bit? Like that? Is that better? Okay. All right, so how do you know this is not an epithelium right here? All because it has extensive extracellular material. It has an extensive matrix. And I see fibers. The fibers are oriented in all different directions, and there's all kinds of fibers in there. There's strong collagen fibers. There's thinner elastic fibers. There's even weak reticular fibers. All right, so this is not a particularly strong connective tissue. This is what we call areolar. So anytime you see connective tissue with all these little, like, fractured lines running through it, kind of reminds me of a stained glass window, that's areolar connective tissue. All right, here's an atypical connective tissue. I think I put this off till now. And this is an atypical connective tissue because here is the border of one cell right here. I don't see any cytoplasm in the cell. The only thing I see is a vacuole that's containing lipid. Now, the cell that's right next to it, it just so happens we made a cut through the nucleus and cytoplasm, and you see just a little tiny bit of cytoplasm here, but most of the material, most of the intracellular material is what in this particular cell? It's fat, or a better term would be adipose. All right, so in this particular kind of connective tissue, what's important is not the extracellular material that we find outside the cell, but the intracellular material inside this vacuole, namely lipid. So adipose connective tissue is a little bit strange that way because it doesn't have an extensive matrix, but nonetheless, we still call it a connective tissue. Okay. This is a reticular connective tissue. Whenever these fibers are stained very, very dark, and I see a high degree of branching right here. This is a reticular connective tissue. And these reticular fibers, could you tell me how strong they are? Are they strong, medium strength, or weak? Yeah, they're weak. So, for instance, a typical organ that is based on reticular connective tissue is the spleen. And if that ever gets damaged, these fibers are so weak that we can't even suture the spleen closed, for instance, if it's lacerating and hemorrhaging, because as soon as you place a suture, guess what happens? The sutures just rip out and it causes even more bleeding. All right, so that's a problem for a spleen when we're trying to preserve a spleen. All right, here's another kind of connective tissue. All right, I see extensive extracellular material. And you should know the name of this material right here. It's a very strong, thick fiber. What's the strongest, thickest fiber? That's collagen. But now these collagen fibers are oriented in all different directions. They go from right to left. Where I have the arrow, they're coming in and out of the plane of the picture. And so this is dense connective tissue, but since the orientation of collagen is kind of random and irregular, we call it dense irregular connective tissue. Nonetheless, these cells right here secrete those fibers into the matrix, so we call these cells fibroblasts. These are fibroblasts that secrete collagen fibers. Okay. And again, I see some more collagen fibers, but now look at the orientation. They form parallel sheets to each other. And so this is dense, regular connective tissue, which makes up tendons and ligaments. This is very strong. Oh, I remember talking about this one last time. Yeah, we made it all the way to bone. Fantastic. All right, so don't forget, you can pull on either end of the tendon, very difficult to damage, but if you use this tendon inappropriately, like if you pull on it from side to side, what can happen? Yeah, these fibers can be tweezed apart from each other, and that can damage the tendon and ligament. Okay. All right, so here are the different kinds of cartilages that we were looking at. Ones without any fibers, that's hyaline cartilage. The next kind of cartilage, these branched fibers right here, these are elastic fibers, so that makes this elastic cartilage, connective tissue. And then these fibers that are arranged in parallel sheets, these are the very strong collagen fibers, so this would be fibrocartilage. And what kind of tissue is fibrocartilage? It's connective tissue. Yeah, remember, how many main kinds of tissues do you have in your body? Yeah, there are four, right? There are four kinds, and connective tissue is one of them. So in lab, when somebody asks you what kind of tissue it is, give the specific name, like cartilage, and what kind of cartilage it is, like hyaline cartilage. But don't forget, also tell them that it is a connective tissue, right? So don't say hyaline cartilage muscle or hyaline cartilage epithelium, right? That won't work. And when you see this slide right here, these are where the cells live, in these little bubbles right here, just like in cartilage. But one nature of this particular slide that you should appreciate is that we see what? Tubes inside tubes inside tubes. And this kind of even reminds me of taking a botany class. These look like tree rings, but it's not. This is how bones are put together in solid bone. This is the microscopic structure of solid bone, or what we call compact bone. It's got rings upon rings, and that makes bone very, very strong. The cells that we find in bone are not chondrocytes. They're not fibroblasts. We name them after a general name for bone, which is osteo, right? So osteocyte are the cells that we see in these lacunae right here. All right, so you got to know. So if we say, hey, what kind of tissue is this? What are you going to say? I would say bone connective tissue. Bone connective tissue, right? And the cells are osteocytes. We're going to learn a little bit more about this structure a little later on. Now here's another sort of atypical connective tissue, but you should appreciate that it is not an epithelium. Why is that? Because the cells are far apart from each other. It has extensive extracellular material, or the matrix. And in this kind of connective tissue, the matrix is actually a fluid. Completely opposite compared to the matrix that's in bone. The matrix in bone is what? Solid, calcium, phosphate. It's like cement. But in this connective tissue, it's a fluid. That fluid is what we call plasma. So this tissue right here is what we call blood connective tissue. And it's connective tissue because it connects your body, right? It can take a hormone from one part of your body, deliver it to another part. It can take oxygen from one part, deliver it to another part. So it connects functionally all the different parts of your body. And so it has some different cells that you should be aware of, besides just the plasma right here, which is the matrix. Here are red blood cells, otherwise known as erythrocytes, and erythro means red, right? So it's a red cell. And then I see two white blood cells. And another name for a white blood cell is a leukocyte. Leuko means what? It means white. Yeah, it just means white. There are about five types of leukocytes, and I see two different kinds. These are the most common that you find, and if you look at a blood smear in lab underneath a microscope, and you'll really have to know how to use a microscope to see blood because these are small cells. All right, so if you can find blood, then you're doing really good with your microscope. You should be easy to find these white blood cells. Right, a lymphocyte is the cytoplasm is almost completely made up by the nucleus. Just a big spherical nucleus makes up a lymphocyte. A neutrophil, on the other hand, has this lobulated nucleus with little connections between them. So again, that's really easy to see. We don't do a lot of teaching of the different kinds of white blood cells and what they look like in a blood smear, but your book has some pretty nice pictures of them. And, you know, basically I don't teach that in my labs because the way that you differentiate different white blood cells is by what color they are and if they have granules in them or not, and what color the granules are. And you know what? I just have no clue what I'm looking at when it comes to that color, so I can't teach anybody what that is. So therefore, I don't test you on that. But if your lab instructor makes a big deal of it, then of course take advantage of that, right? Because all those different white blood cells are important. All right, so we said red blood cells carry oxygen. What's the general function of a white blood cell? Fight infection, right? They're a part of your immune system. They help protect your body from infection. Okay. All right. So then we have some pictures of, I think we covered all the kinds of connective tissue, yeah. Okay. And let's move to muscle. All right, so don't forget, you got epithelium, connective tissue, muscle. And does anybody know how many different kinds of muscle do we have? Yeah, we got three. Okay. And so they are skeletal muscle. And you should know some general characteristics. Skeletal muscle is under voluntary control. And your biceps brachii is made out of skeletal muscle. You can willfully cause that muscle to contract or to relax, right? It's under control of your consciousness. The other kinds of muscle are not. They're controlled automatically by part of the nervous system called the autonomic nervous system. And those are cardiac muscle. You can't control your heart. It's taken care of automatically. And smooth muscle is another kind of involuntary muscle. And smooth muscle makes up the wall of hollow organs besides your heart, like your reproductive tract, your digestive tract, contains smooth muscle for contraction. So muscle is specialized to contract, every form of it. What we're looking at right here is skeletal muscle. And it is what? Voluntary. It's controlled voluntarily. And as a matter of fact, here's something really strange. Skeletal muscle is the only kind of tissue or subtissue that you actually can control with your conscious thoughts in your body. That's the only thing that you can control. Everything else is what? Taken care of automatically or autonomically. So skeletal muscle, what's your general impression when you look at this slide right here? What do you see? What stands out? I see all those stripes. Those stripes we call striations, right? That's because of the internal structure of muscle that we'll look in some detail in when we get to the muscle chapter. And what else about the geometry of these cells? Are they circular? No, they're very linear. They're not branched, right? They're very, very, very long. And so this right here is a muscle cell. It's long and straight, doesn't have any branches. And if we look inside the cell, I see numerous nuclei in there. So skeletal muscle is multinucleate. That's pretty strange because we looked at a red blood cell, and I forgot to mention, it is anucleate. It doesn't have any nucleus in it whatsoever. It's alive, doesn't live for very long because it doesn't have a nucleus. But a muscle cell has many nuclei, and that's because at one point in time during your development, this muscle cell was hundreds of cells that joined together to form this really long fiber. So, Today, when somebody has a skeletal muscle cell, we don't really call it a cell, we call it a fiber. And it's non-branched, and it still has all of those nuclei from all those precursor cells that it developed from. Okay, so we see muscle cell or muscle fiber are exactly the same terms for skeletal muscle. And our next slide right here, what stands out on this particular slide? Do you see stripes? What's the proper term for that striped appearance? Yeah, striation. So cardiac muscle is striated. Now, what are some differences? So that's a similarity with skeletal muscle. What are some differences with skeletal muscle? This is branched. Do you see some branching? Look at this branch right here. All right, so that's an important distinction from skeletal muscle. And a heart muscle cell is very short. It only exists from this dark vertical line to this dark vertical line right here. So heart muscle cells, cardiac muscle, are very short. And between the cells, there's this special junction. So skeletal muscle doesn't have these junctions. And these junctions are called intercalated discs. And this helps coordinate the heart activity. So that if one heart cell starts to contract, guess what your whole heart does? Your whole heart contracts as a result of that, because information passes through these intercalated discs via those little holes between the cells that are called gap junctions. And that's the way the heart should operate. You shouldn't have one part of the heart contracting and then a second or two later another part contracting, because it won't pump blood. It's got to contract as a unit. Now, what about skeletal muscle in your body? Would you like all the skeletal muscles in your body to contract as a unit? No, right? Because if you contract your biceps, if it had gap junctions with all the other skeletal muscle cells in your body, what would happen? Well, all your muscles would contract, right? And you couldn't go anywhere. The heart, on the other hand, right, has to contract as a unit. And what kind of control is it under? Involuntary. That's right. You really can't control your heart rate. You can play around with it a little bit, maybe with meditation. You can think of some nice time you had in your life someplace, you know, sitting on a beach in Cancun, drinking margaritas or something, right? And your heart rate probably will settle down real nice. Or if you can think about the practicum that's happening next week, what happens to your heart rate? It goes up, right? So you can play with it, or somebody else could play with it. Like I could say, okay, put your books away and you have a pop quiz right now. Okay, what would happen to your heart rate? Well, it just went up, right? But that's not really you controlling it. That's just the environment kind of controlling it for you. All right, and the other characteristic is what? These muscle cells are branched. All right, and that's just so that if there is a signal to contract up in this layer, it moves down through all the layers of the heart, not just longitudinally, but across the whole heart wall as well. So that's an important thing. So when we change the structure of a tissue, guess what we change? The function of it, right? So you should be able to relate the function of how the heart works compared to skeletal muscle, because what the structure is really a lot different. All right, but nonetheless, we still see these striations right here. So some parts of cardiac muscle are very similar to skeletal muscle. But, now this is the worst picture in the whole book, and maybe it still is in the new edition, I'm not sure. All right, this is a picture of smooth muscle. And a smooth muscle cell, if you were to look at it, okay, do you have a different picture in your book? Did they change it out? Okay, a smooth muscle cell, all right, is not long and narrow. It kind of looks like a football that's been stretched out. All right, and if you look at this picture, and I drew it a little bit different, those are kind of right to left, okay, smooth muscle is not striated. It has a different internal structure. And so what might you tell me about how smooth muscle contracts compared to skeletal and cardiac muscle? If it has a different internal structure, you don't see those striations. What could you guess? The nature of its contraction is going to be a lot different. Right? When you get into a physiology class, you'll explore how it is different. Right? But it doesn't have the same structure, which means it functions a little bit differently inside the body as well. And this is what we find in the digestive tract and reproductive tract. All right, I guess maybe you could think of an example that just came to my mind on how differently it functions. Let's just say we have a 9-pound weight, and we're going to tell somebody to do a curl with that 9-pound weight, and so they're using their biceps brachii. What kind of muscle is the biceps brachii? Skeletal muscle. And let's just say, okay, hold that 9-pound weight there like that for 9 months. What's going to happen? Well, they're going to give up after maybe about 3 or 4 minutes. Okay, that's skeletal muscle. All right, now let's put a fetus in utero, and what does that smooth muscle of a uterus have to do? Stay contracted for 9 months to maintain that pregnancy. Okay, so those different muscles function a little bit differently, used for different purposes. Okay, so we'll talk about that a little bit later or in the next class. All right, so that's it for muscle. Muscle, nonetheless, is specialized for contraction. And this is our last tissue. This is nervous tissue. There are two kinds of cells that we find in nervous tissue. Here is one of them. This is what we call a neuron. It is specialized to transmit electrical impulses over very long distances because it has these very long processes that come out of them. And this is what we call an axon. So electrical signal, oh, let's take a look at this illustration right here. So this is a typical neuron, and it has some very short projections or processes coming out of them. The short ones we call dendrites. This is the receiving end of a neuron. And then here is the what we call the cell body or the soma of the neuron. It contains the nucleus and organelles and mitochondria. So information is received by these dendrites, transmitted over the cell body, and then a very long distance down this very long projection, which is what we call an axon. And information flow is one way. It always goes from dendrite to cell body, down an axon, down to the axon terminus right here. And these can be extremely long distances. Could be a meter or a meter and a half long. So these are very, very long cells. And so here is just a picture of one. Here is the cell body, and here is a long axon that is going someplace. Now I see some other cells, or at least the nuclei of some other cells that are surrounding the neurons, and we call those supporting cells or neuroglia, or neuroglial cells. So there are two kinds of cells. Let me make sure that I have that good. All right, so you know how to spell neuroglia, or neuroglial cells. These are support cells. They tell the neurons how to connect up with each other and maybe how long they should stay alive and what their activity is. So they're just as important, but they do not send electrical impulses. All right, so for years and years and years, everybody was only interested in neurons because those are the ones that actually transmit information. But without neuroglia, the neurons wouldn't know what to do or what to connect up to. So guess what? Now everybody's interested in neuroglia, and indeed they should be, right? Because they actually help determine the architecture of your nervous system and how well it functions. Okay, so a nerve impulse is just some electrical activity, which we call an action potential, moving along a nerve cell, going from dendrite to cell body to axon. All right, then our last topic right here are membranes. And I think we've talked about membranes before a little bit in here. The two major kinds are what we call mucous membranes, and another one is a serous membrane. Mucous membranes, a definition of a mucous membrane is just a membrane that lines a cavity that's open to the outside world, like your oral cavity, right? Digestive tract, reproductive tract, respiratory tract, that the part of it, at least, that air is going through is open to the outside world. Otherwise, air couldn't get into your lungs, right? So those are mucous membranes. Most mucous membranes secrete mucus, so they have an epithelium with what kind of cells in them? Goblet cells, that's right. Okay, but that's not the definition. If a membrane secretes mucus or not, that's not a good definition for a mucous membrane. It is what? It is, a definition for a mucous membrane is that it has to be open to the outside world. Right, it has to be open to the outside world. All right, serous membranes, don't forget, are membranes that line cavities that are not open to the outside world. So give me a couple of them, at least the major ones. The pericardial cavity, right around the heart, pericardial cavity, the pericardium. That's a serous membrane. What's another one? pleural membrane around the lungs, not the inside, not the airway passageways, but on the outside of the lungs. And then the peritoneal membrane around the peritoneum, which is what? The abdominal pelvic cavity has a serous membrane. And so don't forget, the serous membrane has got three parts to it. Let's see, do I have any pictures of a serous membrane someplace? Maybe. Yeah, here's a pretty good picture. All right, so let's zoom into this. What are the three parts to a serous membrane? All right, so we're looking at the respiratory tract. So here is, there's a mucous membrane right here, but the membrane that is surrounding the outside of the lungs right here, that's a serous membrane. And the membrane that's right on the surface of the lungs, it's not labeled. What are we going to do? What is this membrane right here, right on the surface of the lungs? That's the visceral pleura. And then the one on the body wall, this is the parietal pleura. And the third part of any kind of serous membrane is the space between them. And it has fluid in there, which we call serous fluid. Or you could say pleural fluid, since it's the pleural cavity. And in your notes, what does it say an infection of the pleura membrane is called? Pleurisy. Yeah, pleurisy. Very painful. You don't feel like taking a breath when you have pleurisy because it's so painful. It feels like somebody's stabbing you in the chest. All right, so what else should we go over? How about the pericardium? All right, so here's the heart. And here's the membrane right on the surface of the heart. That is the visceral pericardium. The one that is lining the pericardial cavity is the parietal pericardium. And then here is the pericardial space with a little bit of fluid in there. Okay? And an infection of the pericardium is called pericarditis. That's pretty serious. Okay. All right. Then you have some other membranes in your body. Cutaneous membrane, that's your skin, which is what we're going to look at next in this class. All right, there's also some membranes around joints, certain joints that move. Do I have a question?
So for parietal, and I'm not sure because like, it winds again, so does it say up, is that right? And then does it
spread
out, did it say
outer surface? Well, you know what? These pictures are really good right here. Let me see. In the notes that I have, right here, that terminology is a little confusing because it's not... Do we see it right here? Am I in the right... Oh, here. Yeah, so if you have a body cavity, like your chest wall, okay, the outer surface would be your skin. The inner surface would, so the inner surface is deep part of the body wall, okay? But the parietal membrane is what? Superficial compared to the visceral part of it, all right? So that's why it's really important you have to be really careful with proper anatomic language because you can get lost, yeah, okay? Okay. Okay, so a synovial membrane surrounds some joints if they're freely movable joints. Who can give me an idea of what a freely movable joint is? Give me an example. Yeah, knee, shoulder. They've got shoulders, great. Elbow. All right, those are synovial joints with synovial membranes. And just like a serous membrane, they secrete fluid into the joint as well. Okay. There are membranes that surround all bones in your body. We call that the periosteum. Peri means, what does peri mean? Surrounding. And osteum, it has something to do with bones, right? So a lot of times you can figure this out just by knowing some nomenclature. And endosteum, woo, tell me, what does endosteum mean? It's not the membrane that surrounds the outside of the bone. There are cavities inside bones that have a membrane lining as well, and we call that the endosteum. Okay, so we're going to get to those, that chapter pretty soon. Bones are pretty fun. All right, so that's it for tissues. All right, but what I want to do right now is to get you guys started, oriented for the practicum. Because we got practicums in lab coming up next week, and you're spending a lot of time in lab. And I've got a couple labs today myself. On the practicums, if you're absolutely familiar with the histology slides in your textbook, you should be able to get 100% on the test. So all the pictures or demonstrations on the test are going to look exactly like the ones you have in your book, all right, or very, very similar. And as a matter of fact, some of the pictures will actually be the pictures that are in your book. So you just need to work some repetition into your study so that you can develop an eye for seeing what's on these pictures. All right, so what would be the easiest slide we could put on the practicum?
Bone,
right? You could look at bone just for not even a second, right? Because it looks what, like what? Tree rings, all right? So that would be easy. What kind of cells are in bone?
Osteocytes,
right? So as long as you guys can work with that material, I think you're going to do pretty well on the practicum. But there could be other things like a microscope. You might have to say, what part of a microscope is this? And also, there's probably going to be some skin on your practicum as well, which we haven't talked about in lecture, but today we're going to get to skin in lecture. But make sure you talk to your lab instructor to make sure that you know what's going to be on your lab practicum, because all the labs don't have to take the same practicum, because we all go a little bit different paces, and every instructor teaches a little bit differently. All right, plus what? Mitosis. Okay, you got to know something about mitosis. So here we have a slide, and what do we got here? It looks like mitosis to me. I see some condensed chromatin, right? I see a nice spindle apparatus, and all of the chromosomes are lined up right on the equator of the cell. So a good question would be, what phase of mitosis is this? And you would say metaphase, because metaphase means what? Middle phase. Chromosomes lined up right there. All right? And where would you find a picture that looks very similar to this one? It's in your textbook, right? Okay, it might be turned upside down or backwards or something, but that's really close. What do we got here? We just have a rest station right here. Okay, now, here's a tissue. What kind of tissue is this? It's connective tissue, but you probably want to be a little bit more specific. How about cartilage? I like cartilage because I see these bubbles. What do we call these bubbles? Lacunae. And what are the cells that are in the bubbles called? Chondrocytes, because it's cartilage. So these are chondrocytes in cartilage. Now, what kind of cartilage is it? Do you see fibers? No, it's hyaline cartilage. It just looks translucent right here. So you have to know what these lead lines are pointing to as well. Chondrocyte, and then this would be matrix or ground substance or something, but I wouldn't say collagen fibers because I don't see any collagen fibers right there. Okay. So hyaline cartilage, don't forget to say what? CT, connective tissue. All right, what do we see here? Bunch of cells. And then this is just interphase, right? So this is just the phase in between mitosis, in between when the cell is dividing. The nucleus is just all nice and homogeneous. I might see a nucleolus in some areas right here. All right, so this cell is not undergoing mitosis. That part of the cell cycle is interphase. And what do we got here? Looks like another mitosis. What phase? Yeah, the chromosomes are separating. I see a dropout in the signal right here where they used to be. They're being pulled apart. So this would be anaphase. And what? Bone? CT. And then you got to know, what's that pointing to? Osteocyte and lacunae. Okay, and the practicum? Always read the question to see what it's asking. Maybe it's just asking for the cell. Maybe it's asking for the tissue. And if the question's asking for the name of the cell or the fiber and you put the tissue down, that's not going to help you out, right? So always read the question first before you look at the sample. Before you look at the sample, read the question, and then that will help you answer the question right away. All right, what do we got here? Connective tissue? Well, look, we got what? A nice basement membrane. We've got an apical surface with just a free space right here. And the cells are tightly packed together. Nice epithelium. Now, how do you characterize epithelium? By number of layers and cell shape. How many layers do you see from basal region to apical region? Just one layer. And what's the shape of these cells? Cuboidal. So this is a simple cuboidal epi. Don't say connective tissue. Okay, and so try to keep your wits about you. You should have plenty of time, but I know, you know, we all make mistakes, but just really, if it's epithelium, say it. If it's connective tissues, put it on your piece of paper, and don't get them confused. What's this, an epithelium?
No,
connective tissue, what kind?
Blood.
And you got red blood cells, you've got Lymphocytes, and you've got
neutrophils.
Okay, and then of course you should know that neutrophil and lymphocyte are kind of white blood cell for fighting infection. Now what do we got right here? I see basement membrane. This is what your eye should be drawn to immediately. Basement membrane, right? Apical surface. Here is just a free space right here. This could be the lumen of some kind of tube or the digestive tract or trachea, right? Just has air. And yes, you're right, I see cilia. So we're and these cells are all packed together, so this is an epithelium. So from basement membrane to apical surface, I see, well, in some places it looks like maybe one cell, other places it looks like two or three cells, so we call this pseudostratified. And it is ciliated. And the cells in the apical region right here are columnar, and it's an epithelium. So pseudostratified, ciliated, columnar epithelium. The other thing I have right here for you to look at is, right on the cursor, what kind of cell is that? That's a goblet cell. What's it secreting? Mucus onto the apical surface, and those cilia sweep it with whatever dust particles that it traps out of your body, for instance. Okay, so pseudostratified ciliated columnar epithelium, and deep, too, an epithelium is going to be what kind of tissue on all of your slides? It's going to be a connective tissue. You don't have to tell me exactly what kind because it's not labeled in your book what kind it is. Right? Just say connective tissue. All right, so that's everything on this slide. How you doing? Okay, so far? All right. Oh, yeah. I see three. So here is a goblet cell. Here is a goblet cell. And here is a goblet cell. And inside that goblet cell is filled with vesicles that are containing mucin, which is mucus. Mucin is the glycoprotein that makes moco that comes out of your nose when you get a cold. Okay. All right. Connective tissue. How about it? No, it's not a connective tissue. These cells are all packed together, very, very close. Look at this nice basement membrane right here. Here's the apical surface. So how many layers do we see? Many, so we call it stratified. What's the shape of the cells up here in the apical region? Squamous. So this is a stratified squamous epithelium. Yeah, don't say connective tissue. Don't say muscle. Okay, maybe I'll zoom into this one just a little bit. All right, but this is a tube that has been cut in cross-section, a nice transverse section. So if my finger was a tube, if we cut it just like that, you'd be looking right down, right to the inside of my finger right here. So this is the lumen of that tube that's going to be carrying some kind of product someplace. Basement membrane, right? Apical surface. So this is an epithelium. What does it look like in terms of layers? It's stratified. I see at least two layers right there, and the shape of these cells are cuboidal. So it's a stratified cuboidal epithelium. And what's this tissue over here? That's connective tissue. Ah, it's not labeled. But that's okay. Good practice. What do we got here? What should your eye look for? Basement membrane. Free edge, right? Free space on the apical surface. So this is an epithelium. And, oh, it's a strange looking one. These cells up here kind of look like pillows. This is a weird one because it's a shapeshifter. This is the transitional that we find, for instance, in the urinary bladder. These can be tall and pillow-like, or they can become flat and squamous when they stretch out when the bladder is full. And then they return to this shape after voiding. All right. Epithelium? No basement membrane, no free edge. Connective tissue of some kind. Stained glass window, to my eyes. Sorry, I don't know what it looks like to you. But this is what? Areolar connective tissue. What are the names of these cells right here? Fibroblasts. Yeah, they're nuclei, but you know, that's an organelle. A question that I would like to ask is, what's the name of the cell? So I would say fibroblasts. These are the nuclei of fibroblasts. These thick filaments right here are collagen, right, and elastic fibers, and I don't know if I see any reticular fibers in there or not. Okay, they would be really, really thin, darkly stained. What's this? Adipose CT, fat in a vacuole, nuclei of adipocytes. What does your book call them? They call them fat cells. That's a little grade schoolish actually for this class, fat cell, you should say what? Adipocyte, right? Adipocyte. Okay. And what do we got right here? I see a nucleus. What's beginning to form in this nucleus? The chromatin is going from extended to condensed. You're beginning to see it form chromosomes. So this is the very early part of mitosis, which is what we call prophase, and it's even early prophase. All right, the centrosome complex is starting to separate. Its spindle apparatus is starting to form, but the nuclear envelope is still there. So this is early prophase. And this slide, dense, regular connective tissue. What are these fibers? Collagen. What's the name of this cell? That's a fibroblast. Okay, collagen. It's dense, irregular. Dense, irregular. Dense, irregular. Yeah, dense, irregular. Hopefully I've been saying that. Dense, irregular. Now, this one here is reticular. Look at the branch pattern. This is at a much higher magnification than the dense connective tissue that we looked at. Okay? But so this is reticular connective tissue. I see a question. Reticular, I think just do a Google on it and see what you can come up with, but it just means a lot of branches. Okay? Reticular kind of just means branches. Okay. And basement membrane, apical surface. What do we got here? An epithelium of some kind, right? How about stratified columnar epithelium? And down over here we have connective tissue, right? So dense stratified columnar epithelium. All right, there's a lot of words you got to string together. What we got here? Smooth muscle. If you put lousy picture down as an answer, I don't know if you get credit for that. All right, basement membrane, free surface, simple, columnar, connective tissue. No, it's an epithelium, right? Okay, make sure you get that right. Don't mix them up. Okay, now what is this one? That's regular CT. And what are those fibers in there? Collagen. Are they strong or weak? They're strong. And what are these cells right here? Fibroblasts. What do we call this area right here, generally speaking? It's not labeled on your slide, not bad to go over it again. What do we call that space between cells and connective tissue? Yeah, it's a matrix. So collagen, where do we find collagen? It is in the matrix, which is what? Extracellular. So we're going to learn a bunch of chemicals in here. Some are extracellular, some are intracellular, depending on what they are. This is skin. We haven't gotten to skin yet, but maybe today we will. Cardiac muscle. You should know all those characteristics of cardiac muscle. Telophase with what's happening? Cytokinesis. All right. So now you know what we're going to do? We're going to go a little faster through these, okay? So, and this is what you got to do at home. And I'll try to put this as a video online if I don't have it as a video in Blackboard already. Okay, so you can practice this with a little speed. Oh, we didn't talk about that one yet, so maybe I'll just not go so fast. I see cells in these little bubbles. It's some kind of cartilage. What kind of cartilage? This is fibrocartilage, because I see all these parallel sheets of collagen in the matrix. All right, so fibrocartilage what? CT. Don't forget to say CT. Skeletal muscle. That's another kind of skin, which we're going to look at today. As a matter of fact, I was thick skin. And it's good I have thick skin. Okay. That's right. Always question authority. All right. So what do we got here? I see bubbles with cells in there. What are the name of these cells? These are chondrocytes in lacunae, and these branching fibers right here are elastic fibers. So this is elastic cartilage CT. Elastic cartilage CT. Mitosis looks like. What phase? I see chromosomes. I see the spindle apparatus formed already, but the chromosomes, are they all lined up? Are they organized? Are they separating? Or are they random all over the place? They're random all over the place. So that is? That's prophase, before they lined up. Late prophase in particular. Now, chromosomes are all lined up in the middle of the cell? Metaphase. Okay. All right, so we'll go a little bit faster. I think this is where we started. What is this?
Oh.
Well, that's because I just showed it to you. That was metaphase. Okay, so we won't go quite that fast. All right, so just tell me the tissue that you see. It's connective tissue, but it is cartilage, and on top of that, it is hyaline cartilage, CT, right? Hyaline cartilage, CT. Interphase, that's a part of the cell cycle. Anaphase, the chromosomes are separating. Bone, CT, don't forget that CT. Simple cuboidal epi. Blood, CT, and you should know the names of all those cells. Oh, I love it when I torture you guys. Yeah. Pseudociliated columnar, right? Epithelium. Okay. Stratified, many layers. Squamous epithelium. Stratified cuboidal epithelium. Transitional epithelium. Areolar, CT. Adipose, CT. Yeah, early prophase. Dense, irregular CT. Did I get it right this time? Dense, irregular CT. Okay. We'll have to listen to the tape. Reticular CT. Stratified columnar epithelium. Smooth muscle. Simple columnar epithelium. Dense regular CT. That's skin. What kind of skin? That was actually thin skin. We'll look at that in just a little bit. Cardiac muscle. Telophase with cytokinesis. Fibrocartilage CT. Skeletal muscle. That was thick skin. Elastic cartilage CT, and then here we have
prophase.
Yeah, late prophase. Alright, I think we got time just to do it one more time really fast. Alright, so I'm gonna show you these pictures maybe for about a quarter of a second. And just tell me the tissue name. And if you haven't looked at them like this before, you're probably just beginning to see what's going on there, but if you were in lab with me already, then you're probably having a pretty good time with this. So you're going to see it for less than a second, and on the practicum, you're going to be staring at these things for a minute or 2 minutes. So you're going to be bored out of your mind during a practicum, which is okay with me. All right. So this kind of shows you how important just repetition is in anatomy. The more times you look at something, the easier it is that you develop an eye to see it and it sinks in. And then later on in the class, we make all kinds of nice connections between all these little bits and pieces of information that we learn. All right, so here we go. What is this? Metaphase. Hyaline cartilage CT. Interphase. Anaphase, bone CT, simple cuboidal epi, blood CT, pseudostratified ciliated columnar epithelium. It doesn't matter what order you say them in. Stratified squamous, stratified cuboidal, transitional, areolar CT, adipose CT, prophase, early prophase, dense irregular CT, reticular CT, that's a little fast, stratified columnar epithelium, smooth muscle, simple columnar epi, dense regular CT, That's a thin skin. Cardiac muscle. Telophase with cytokinesis. Fibrocartilage. That was really fast. I thought it was another slide. Maybe it's this next. But that was fibrocartilage CT. It was parallel sheets of collagen with those cells with bubbles. The cells within those bubbles called lacunae. Skeletal muscle. That was thick skin. Ah, too long. Okay, so that was fibrocartilage CT, and then here we have anaphase. I mean, sorry, prophase, late prophase, late prophase. Okay. All right, so we're done with this particular chapter, so we're going to move on to the skin. All right, which is chapter 5. So hopefully nobody got seasick looking at those. Five labeled. All right, so what is the organ system that makes your skin up? Your integument. Yeah, so we're going to talk about integument. And the integument is composed of a number of structures, including your skin and some accessory structures, things that make your skin work right. And these accessory structures would be hair, nails, some glands, like for secreting sweat and oil, things like that. And then there's also a little bit of muscle in there as well that I'll show you. All right, so the functions of the integument system, right? It protects internal structures from infection. Like on the surface of your skin, oh, I should remember this number, I forgot. For every square inch, I think there's about 250 million bacteria on every square inch of your skin. But those usually are healthy bacteria for you to have. As a matter of fact, they probably help fight other kinds of bacteria off that are infectious to you. We call that the normal microbiota of our body, right? So that's important to have. But we don't want those bacteria getting into our internal structures. The skin keeps them out, right? Another important function is that the skin keeps water inside our body, keeps us from drying out. And we would dehydrate very rapidly if we were to lose our integument. How do most people lose their integument, unfortunately? By burns. So what are the two things that somebody should be really concerned with immediately after a burn on a victim? Infection and dehydration. Okay, you can succumb quickly, right, just in a matter of hours to those things unless we start to help those people out. But other things are important too. Regulation of body temperature, like when you get hot. If your body temperature goes above 98.6 or 8, what happens to you? You start sweating, and that cools your body back down. Integument is important for that. Integument is also important for producing a form of vitamin D, and a vitamin D is very important so that you can absorb calcium in your diet and use it, because you need calcium in your body. Could anybody think of a reason why you need calcium in your body? Bones, yeah. That's very important, but probably one of the least important things that I think we need calcium for in our bodies. So during the rest of the class, we'll talk about these other important reasons as well. And then sensation is very important for communicating with your environment. What kind of sensations have you felt on your skin? Pain? Ooh, I'm sorry. What else? But this is true. That's important. Now, that's important to feel pain on the surface of your body, because when you damage your body, you feel pain, and what would be worse? Damaging your body and not feeling pain, because what? They would continue to become damaged. So pain is an important sense. But what else do we got? Cold. Temperature. Yeah, hot, cold. But also when there's a wind blowing, it makes the hairs on your skin move back and forth. You can feel that. You can feel pressure, touch, vibration. So there's a lot of things that you can feel with just your skin. All right, your skin has two main layers. And then there is a third layer that's underneath it, which is really not part of the integument, but since it's there right now, we talk about it during the class. The superficial layer is the epidermis. The deeper layer of the skin is the dermis. And those terms make sense, because what does epi mean? Epi means actually on top of. All right, so epidermis is the layer that is on top of the dermis. So the dermis is the deep layer. The epidermis is an epithelium. How would you talk about an epithelium? By the shape of the cells and number of layers it has. And in particular, the epidermis is stratified as what? Pancake-shaped cells and stratified. So it's squamous and stratified. And it's got four or five layers, which we're going to look at today, depending on what kind of skin it is. The dermis is the deep layer. And it's made out of connective tissue. And there are actually two layers in the dermis that we're going to look at. All right, the superficial layer of the dermis is called the papillary layer, and then the deeper layer is called the reticular layer. Got papillary and reticular. And then the last layer, which is not part of the integument, but it's right there for us to look at, we call that the hypodermis, which means below the dermis. And sometimes we call it the subcutaneous tissue, because your skin, sometimes we call that the cutaneous membrane. Subcutaneous means what? Underneath the skin as well. So those are very nice descriptive terms that make sense. And the hypodermis is loose areolar connective tissue. Sometimes we call it superficial fascia. And what the hypodermis does, since it's connective tissue, it just helps connect your skin, namely the dermis, to other underlying structures. What else you got in your body in there? You got muscle, you got bones, and the hypodermis just connects your skin to all those different kinds of structural features that you have. And the other interesting thing about the hypodermis, you're going to see that even though it's loose connective tissue, right, it has a lot of fat cells. And we can store up to maybe half of our body fat just right underneath our skin in the hypodermis. So that's an important. What good is fat? Why does your body store it? It's energy. Yeah, it's energy. It's like pure energy. It's a very good way to store energy. And what does energy allow you to do? If you think of energy, we toss the term energy around, okay, can make ATP. What can you do with ATP? You can contract the muscle, okay, you can lift a weight, right? And what do we call that? Nobody knows where I'm going with this. Now I'm going to hear a bunch of groans. With energy, energy allows you to do work, okay? So that's just a physics. That's just a physics definition of what energy is, all right? So if you have a lot of energy, what does that mean? You can do a lot of work. If you don't have a lot of energy, you're not going to get a lot of work done. Okay. So the epidermis. Let's look at the epidermis. As a matter of fact, let me show you a picture first. It's over here someplace. Nice. So here is a picture that shows everything. The superficial layer right here is the epidermis. It's an epithelium, so what is it missing? Blood vessels. There's no blood vessels in there. The next deepest layer is the dermis. And what do you see in the dermis? A lot of blood vessels, because the dermis is not an epithelium. It's connective tissue. All right. And then underneath the dermis is the hypodermis right here. And you see all those adipocytes right there. All right. So we got epidermis and dermis. And okay, so we're going to talk about the epidermis, just this layer right here. So what is that line that separates the epithelium from deeper layers right here? Or what separates the epidermis from the dermis? It's going to be this basement membrane. You see the basement membrane right there? Okay, kind of waves around, but nonetheless, it's nice and smooth and continuous. All right. So let's look at the layers that make up the epidermis right here. Where are those at? Sorry, what happened? Right here. Okay, so this is an exam figure. Maybe you've seen it already. And here is the basement membrane right here that's separating the epidermis from the dermis down in this region right here. And what kind of epithelium is this? Don't forget, by what? Number of layers in the shape of the cells? Stratified squamous, because on the apical surface of the epithelium, these cells are flat. So it's squamous. And you see many, many layers right here. So stratified squamous. The deepest layer are the cells that are proliferating. They are growing, they're dividing, they're reproducing. What's the name of that process called? Look at that right there. Can you see that? Is that big enough to see? I have a much better picture than you guys do. right here, right where I have the cursor. What's happening there? That looks like metaphase, right? So cells that are dividing and growing, adding cells, we call that proliferation. The epidermis grows from this deepest layer right here, which is what we call the stratum basale. So this is the active layer of mitosis, right? And then, after these cells divide, some of them move up into the next layer. And in this layer right here, they start to form junctions between them, and they get kind of a spiky appearance. And that spiky appearance, then we use to name this layer, we call this the stratum spinosum, spiky or spiny region right here. And these cells then get pushed up to the surface. Right, in this region right here, the cells start to produce a chemical inside them, which is kind of a hard protein, and that protein is what we call keratin. And it's not really formed, it's an immature form of keratin. We call it a pre-keratin, it's more filamentous. And nonetheless, these cells are still alive and producing keratin, which is going to make these cells a little bit harder. Right, but nonetheless, these cells in the stratum basale are still dividing, and they continually push these cells up away from the dermis. And it goes into the next layer right here, which is what we call the stratum granulosum. Guess why we call this the stratum granulosum right here? Because it contains all of these granules, right? And these granules contain keratohyalin and also some lipids, and the lipids work as a waterproofing material, so that your skin actually becomes a saran wrap around your body to prevent what? Dehydration. That's right. Okay. And in the stratum spinosum layer, all the desmosomes connect the cells all together. That keeps bacteria and viruses out of your body, right? Which is the other very important function of your skin. All right, but don't forget, these cells get pushed away farther up to the surface because of the proliferation in the stratum basale, and eventually they move up into this layer right here, which is what we call the stratum corneum. And these cells, excuse me, are dead. Why do you think these cells are dead up over here? Because there's no blood vessels anywhere near there. They just run out of nutrients and oxygen. Okay? Because the blood vessels are way deep down over here in the dermis. And so we call these dead cells filled with keratin, which is a hard material, cornified cells. Right, so they're kind of hard. And so hence the stratum corneum. Now this layer right here is designed to rub off of your body. So any place where you have abrasion taking place in your body, this is the kind of epithelium that is going to cover that surface or line that particular cavity, because it's designed to what? Regenerate itself all the time, to replace those cells that are lost. So stratum. So let's name these different layers. The deepest layer, the stratum basale, basal layer, right? These are the living cells undergoing mitosis. The next one, stratum spinosum, and then the stratum granulosum, and then the dead layer is the stratum corneum. So make sure that you can label these back and forth, starting at the superficial layer or starting at the basal layer, doesn't matter. So stratum corneum, stratum granulosum, stratum spinosum, and stratum basale right here. There's a pretty nice model that you have in lab that shows these layers, but you really have to pay attention to it. And I'll probably put a video online of that model as well, because I know in my labs, I'll have that model on the practicum. I don't know about your labs, if you saw the model or not. Okay, it's just a big plastic model. Now I see some other cells in here. The cells that make up the skin that are producing keratin, guess what we call those? Keratinocytes. Right? And don't get keratin confused with another protein that's very tough and strong, but that protein is extracellular. What do we call that one? It doesn't stretch. That's what we call collagen, right? Don't get keratin and collagen mixed up. They almost sound similar. Well, what are some differences? Collagen is a long filamentous like cable. Where do you find it? Inside the cell or outside the cell? It's outside the cell. It's in the matrix in connective tissue. What about keratin? Where do we find keratin? inside the cell of an epithelial cell, a keratinocyte. It's not in a connective tissue. So we find them in different places, and they have a little bit different nature. All right, so keratin is more of a waterproofing and hardening material, but collagen is more like a cable. All right, some other cells that we see right here, melanocytes. We find these in the stratum basale. They have projections that project up through between the spaces in the stratum spinosum right here. And these melanocytes are pretty special because they produce a pigment. Does anybody know what a pigment is? It's something that produces color, okay? And when something produces color, it means that it absorbs light. And light from the sun, can anybody tell me about the colors that are in light that's coming from the sun? What kind of colors does it contain? It contains red, orange, yellow, blue, green, indigo, violet. Talking about like I know what I'm talking about. This is great. But these are what? Just the colors of the rainbow. So if you have sunlight and it passes through a prism or a raindrop or something, it gets all spread out and these colors can be separated. All right, so you can remember the colors of the rainbow even if you're colorblind by knowing this guy's name right here. All right, so it's really easy to do that. All right, and then there's also what? UV. What's UV stand for? Ultraviolet light, that's coming from the sun, and that's a high energy wavelength that's very damaging to chromosomes, right, that we see that are undergoing mitosis right there. It can damage those chromosomes, damage the functions of those cells, turn that cell into a cancerous cell, all right, so there's a lot of damaging energy in sunlight, so our bodies produce a pigment that can absorb light, and in particular, which ones are you most interested in, especially the ultraviolet light? Okay. And so different pigments absorb different kinds of light, like, for instance, this one right here. There's a pigment in this chair. Guess what wavelengths of light that pigment that's in this chair right here are absorbing? Which ones is it absorbing? It's absorbing red, orange, yellow, green, indigo, and violet. All right. And what it's reflecting is the blue light. Okay. So that's what a pigment does. So there's different pigments. If it's a yellow pigment, it absorbs everything except the yellow. It reflects that particular one. Okay. And if it absorbs that light, then it can't get deeper into the structure. So that melanocyte produces a pigment that absorbs what we like, ultraviolet, but it also absorbs some other colors of light as well. And it gives the appearance of being brown to black in color. But the main thing is what? It's absorbing ultraviolet light. That means that melanin is the name of the compound that's produced by a melanocyte. It protects your body from sunlight, from ultraviolet radiation, right? So the darker your skin is, the more you just have natural sunscreen, the more you're protected from sunlight, right? And the more devoid you are of color pigments in your skin, guess what? How long can you go out in the sun? Like in summertime in L.A.? Like maybe 5 or 10 minutes, right? If you're a redhead or blonde or something, you go out in the sunlight and your skin gets burned, right, almost immediately as a result of that, okay, because you're devoid of that pigment. And guess what? One of the most damaging things that you can do to your skin is? Yeah, go out in sunlight because it has so much ultraviolet light. So the more natural sunscreen you have or the more sunscreen that you put on your skin, the longer and more healthy your skin is going to be as you grow older. That's all there's to it. All right, so don't forget about the name of these cells right here and what they're producing. Another kind of cell right here is called a Langerhans cell. And this one is also, but it is there to fight infection. It's an immune cell, because bacteria are trying to get inside your body to take advantage of all that energy we got in here. And you also have some sensory cells, these Merkel cells right here, for very light pressure, for very light sensation. All right, so let's go over the layers. Stratum, basale, spinosum, granulosum, corneum. Okay, just in that layer right there. Probably if you say it 10 times, you'll have that down cold. All right, now this kind of skin is what we call thin skin. This is what we have over most of our body, but in a couple locations, the skin changes a little bit. There's another layer, and the stratum corneum actually gets a lot thicker as well. So guess what we call that kind of skin? Thick skin. All right, so here we see some skin. And here is the basement membrane. So everything down over here is the dermis, and then from here to here is, oh, I ran out of my mouse, okay. So this is epidermis right here. All right, so let's really zoom into this region. Looks a little grainy, not too bad. All right, so basement membrane. So this is the stratum basale, and then the stratum spinosum. And then I see a little area with some granulated cells right through here. I'd really have to zoom into this region right here. That would be the stratum granulosum. And then you see this little white line right through here. That's the additional layer that we see in thick skin, and that's the stratum lucidum, which means very clear. So if somebody's speaking very clearly and you understand what they're saying, what do we say? How are they speaking? They're very lucid, right? They're a very lucid speaker. All right, so lucid means clear. And then, superficial to the stratum lucidum is the stratum corneum, right? And this is a nice thick layer with just dead cells right here. And as a matter of fact, maybe some of you could even see some, get the impression that there's some melanocytes in this area here. And in lab, really, you know, get a nice microscope and get some skin out and look at it and find those melanocytes because they're really cool. You can see those granules of melanin in them, right? Okay, so this slide is pretty nice because it compares and contrasts thick skin with thin skin over here. So let's see, can I find the layers, right, in thin skin? Well, here's the basement membrane. So this is what underneath the basement membrane is, connective tissue, just like all those slides we looked at. Here's the stratum basale. I don't know if it's not a good enough picture for me to see phases of mitosis right in this region right here, but we know that's taking place. Then the stratum spinosum, and then the stratum granulosum goes right through here, and then we have this thinner layer of the stratum corneum. Okay. All right, so let's go back to this slide right here, and I want to talk now about the dermis a little bit. The dermis has got two main layers, and this slide kind of shows us the two main layers. Look down over here. I see a lot of collagen, all right, and this collagen is oriented in all kinds of different directions. So that's a dense connective tissue, but is it dense regular or dense irregular if it's oriented in all different directions? Irregular. So the deepest layer of the dermis is dense irregular CT, and it has been named reticular. And reticular just means what? Going in all kinds of different directions. That's the toughest part of our skin because it has all that collagen. This layer that's right next to the basement membrane of the epidermis doesn't have a lot of collagen. It's a loose connective tissue. And this one right here we call the papillary layer. So the dermis superficially has a papillary layer, and deep to that is the reticular layer. We call this the papillary layer because of all these little bumps that we see. These are what we call dermal papillae. And inside dermal papillae, we have a lot of blood vessels. So these blood vessels, and in particular capillaries, so these capillaries nourish, right, the stratum basale, give a lot of nutrients and oxygen to this layer right here that is proliferating and undergoing mitosis. So that's why we call this the papillary layer. Okay. Now, you're kind of familiar with skin because we use this as a product almost every day in our life. Not from ourselves, but from animals. All right, what do we make out of the hides of animals? Yeah, leather, for instance. All right, and so what is leather? Where is leather coming from? Is it coming from the epidermis or is it coming from the dermis? Okay. And then, so some people said dermis, and I like that. And is it from the papillary layer or the reticular layer? Which one is stronger? Yeah, it's a reticular layer, right? So leather's the material that your shoes are made out of, coats and things like that, is primarily just this reticular layer right here because it's loaded with collagen, right? So leather is just collagen that's been preserved right? So these layers right here would just rot away, but collagen is a pretty tough protein. It's not going to rot away, right, so easily, and so we can make leather products out of that. That is the dermis. All right. So don't forget, your epidermis starts with the stratum basale, and then the cells move up to the stratum corneum. What are the shape of the cells in the stratum corneum? They're squamous, but they start out as more columnar. All right, so when you, now don't forget, who didn't sign the sign-in sheet yet? Make sure you sign it. So I think I'm almost done, maybe not quite. You guys are bad. Okay, this is on the test. I'll think of these. So next time we're going to finish up with some, by looking at, all right, I want you, we'll talk about the big picture next time. We'll finish up by looking at this one here.